Hi, this is Tommy Ladgate, and you're listening to The Raven and the Blues on REM FM. Something good will come from it, and so it seems I'm cursed with your ways. Just so I write these songs, well, it is the only positive outcome. Maybe your cold heart will make me rich someday. Then it won't matter who loves me, 'cause I can buy that love.
Raven the Blues on REM FM across the coast of Spain, on Skybird Radio on the east coast of the USA, and of course as a podcast as an MP3 file on 15,000 MP3 players across the world. Live sessions, and we welcome to the studios somebody who I'm looking forward to seeing for quite a while. I missed her opening set when she was launching her new album. Tommy Ludgate, welcome to the Raven and the Blues.
Hello, thank you.
You're only just into your 20s, I would guess, are you roughly?
22.
22, yes. A hard blues life before you then, I guess.
Yeah, in a past life, maybe.
Was it always, because this isn't blues so much, it's more jazz and soul and funk and things, but has it always been this particular genre for you?
Yeah, thinking about it, I think it has. I first really got into singing at school when I was about 8, and I was in a choir called Pizzazz, which did kind of old spiritual songs, and that really got me into singing, and that's what I really enjoyed straight away. And it's kind of, done other things and was in a pop group when I was younger, but it's kind of come back to that. So I think, yeah, originally that's kind of what I was into.
So you did dabble with other stuff too?
Yeah, a little bit. But I think, yeah, that a bit of pop, and I think just from what I was played when I was younger, my parents playing music. It's always been this kind of thing. So I think it's just ingrained itself naturally.
So kind of osmosis, really, in a way.
Yeah, then. Maybe. Yeah.
But you seem very comfortable with it, and you write easily into it too. So is that something which came afterwards, or did the writing also happen at roughly the same time as the love?
The writing, I've really got into writing more over the past few years, and I think I've found blues to be, and soul to be, a kind of style that's been a good way to express myself. A lot of this album was kind of about a relationship and breakup, so it's that kind of emotion, and I find blues a really good way of expressing myself.
So there has been pain in the previous life then?
Yeah, or like last year.
I mean, the album was launched this week, but presumably it was recorded over a long period of time, or was it recorded quite quickly?
It was actually recorded quite quickly because I won this competition called Slice the Pie, which is an online thing. You only get given like 6 months that you have to record in, so it was very quick, and I think compared to how long albums normally take, that's quite a quick amount of time, but we managed it, so.
And you say we there because you've got two of the guys with you. There's more in the band as well, though, isn't there?
Just really, yeah, we've got James here on guitar today, Tin and on the bass.
You say today as if tomorrow it might be somebody else. No,
yeah, I don't like them that much. No, only joking. And we also play with a drummer called Ed and Hamish on the keys, so that's the crew that play normally.
And therefore, rehearsals, the writing, everything, is that done as the band, as the crew, or is it really Tommy Ludgate and then the guys come together for the...
No, we've done it as a team thing. I won the money. We'd already been gigging for a year or two together in London, and I won this competition, so I won £15,000 to fund making this album. And I had a load of material that I'd worked on by myself, and then we kind of came together in rehearsals and really formed the sound together and arranged them together, so it's a team thing.
But 15,000 doesn't go very fast. You had to be obviously quite disciplined, I would guess, did you?
Yeah, I think compared to what major labels spend on bands, it's a very small amount, but actually you can do quite a lot with that. And we did go into a studio, but obviously we could have done it a lot cheaper if we'd done it at home. But I think I'm glad we went into a nice studio and had that experience and did it in a really professional way, because I think we came up with something good.
And who produced the album?
It was produced by a guy called Tom Kelly. And then mixed by Hugh Padgham.
Oh, right. And were they brought in as part of the winning the prize kind of thing, or were they people you managed to get as part
I chose to work with them. Well, was lucky to work with them. I chose them.
Yeah.
The way the competition works with the money, you are given complete freedom. So it's like, here's your money, you choose how to spend it, and choose the process you do. So, yeah.
And so did the album come out the way you envisaged it before you went into the studio? Or is it very different from what you thought you would get, if you see what I mean?
It was really hard to know how it would turn out because I've never made an album before. So I'm really pleased with how it turned out. And yeah, I think it is the sound.
Did you have a feel in your head of how it was going to sound? And does it sound the same as that, or is it different?
Some of them just worked out by fluke, I think, and some songs you write and you know exactly how you want them to sound, like one we're going to do later called So Cruel. I originally wrote with the idea of having a choir on the track, which we never had before, obviously. You can't take around a million people to gigs, but something like that, where I managed to get a choir into the studio for that track, it's really worked out how I intended it to sound, so that's a really nice thing.
Let's come on to what you're doing since the album release, after we hear our next piece of music, what we're going to do as our second track.
The second track is called Pain. For someone's joy, there's a little pain. Her smile imprints on me like a stubborn stain. See, I lost my lover to another. Now I must suffer as she swallows my ecstasy. And as we know, what goes around comes back around. And as my smile appears, he's losing ground. Pulls a deep dark water. Changed his life, and he feels the
It's the Raven and the Blues on REM FM, Skybird Radio, and it's an MP3 file. Tommy Ludgate in the studio with us, and a track from her new album. Do you now feel kind of responsible in a sense? I mean, you've got the band, it's a business now, Tommy Ludgate, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty scary stuff. yeah, I do. I feel there's a lot to sort, and I just want to do a good job, but yeah, I'm on a mission, trying to get the music out there.
Were you given complete approval by your parents and said, you do whatever you want, Tommy, or did they sort of say, get some education and do things, some basics first before you can become a musician?
A bit of both. They've always been very supportive, and because I was doing, I was in this girl group when I was younger, and they actually managed me, so they have been very supportive from a young age, and but obviously wanted me to get a good education, yes. So, you know, I carried on, did my A-levels, and then have done a degree, but it's been music. So, very supportive in both senses.
But you look ahead, I mean, some of the musicians we have here for the sessions tend to be old farts like me, really, who've been around the blues for so many years. And they look back, and they can write about all the things that they've done, and they're road warriors in the true sense of the word. Mm. And they're still enjoying doing it. But for you, you've got this sort of great big open vista ahead of you, isn't it, really, for years and years and years. Is that something which fills you with trepidation, or is it exciting?
Very exciting. I just really hope that I can do it forever and ever. Definitely exciting.
And for the band, I mean, do you sort of kind of see, is it a democracy, or is it Tommy Ludgate and team?
I think it's a team thing. I don't know how they feel. No,
they're nodding and smiling, so the implication is there. Yeah.
I think that it's quite liberating in a sense, because you get, you know, there's always so many conflicts within bands and like who makes a decision, whatever. And I think it's good that somebody has a final say, because otherwise you can go round and round and round.
Right.
I'm glad you feel that way, James. Yeah. Good to know.
For quite a long time. And it's good to know that somebody can say, well, this is how I want it, you know. So, like, it's ideal, really, in a lot of ways, because you get to kind of be as involved as you would be, yet there's somebody who makes it. Not that it often needs to be done.
Mm.
You know, it's not like there's loads of conflict. But, like, at least when there is a decision that needs to be made, then somebody can make it.
But on the other hand, it's nice to have a group of people for the support as well, because yes. I wouldn't want to be doing this on my own, no way. Be too lonely.
Is that, yeah, you mean the loneliness of standing on stage just looking at a crowd, you mean?
Just everything, just being involved in what happens next and just enjoying the whole process as a group is much more enjoyable, I think.
You say the whole process, I mean, obviously the winning the competition gave you the money to fund the album. The album is now out. You had a good launch party, which sadly I missed, but did it go well?
Yeah, really good. Really good big audience there, and we really enjoyed the gig. And it was just nice to play our own gig, because we've been doing a lot of showcase things in London, which is a great platform to, you know, getting your music out there. But it was nice to play a decent set, 2:45, do a few covers and just have everyone there and have a bit of a party and just enjoy it.
And now, are you being helped, guided, whatever, by other people through this important part of your career development, or are you left to your own devices to a certain extent?
Left to my own devices a bit too much, I think. I need some help. But no, it's been really nice to win the Slice the Pie. Oh, bone. Hang on.
It's all right.
Reminds me, actually.
Sorry, Chris. Who cares about Chris?
Hey, it's a sensible ringtone, at least. You've got to give him kudos for their ringtone. It could have been something quite abortion, awful.
Yeah, I'm quite glad it wasn't.
What were we discussing?
The future, the management bit, and being left to your own devices. And you said, you could do with a bit more help.
It's been great to win the money from Slice the Pie and have so much freedom, because I think, I don't know, it just seems like a lot of people may not get that freedom, and it's nice to have had that creative side to just do what I feel I want to do. But it's got to a stage now where I think I could really do with some advice, and I'm kind of looking for a manager to help me.
I was going to ask you who your manager is. You're managing yourself, right? Okay.
But no, I would really like to find someone I really get on with, and someone that could help me kind of figure out what to do next, because it's kind of got to that stage. We've got the album. Mm-hmm. I want to get some help with feeding it to the right places.
And the gigs. I mean, how's the work factor coming in? Is it okay, or could you do with an awful lot more?
And more, just, I don't know, it would be ideal to get paid to do the original stuff, and, you know, that's hard.
Yes.
And that would be ideal, wouldn't
it? But it's not like your songwriting, it's not like your material is not friendly, is it? I mean...
Well, I hope it is.
You know, I mean, so when you say get paid to do the original stuff, you mean often you get paid to do the covers things, you mean?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And yeah, you can earn a decent amount doing that. But yeah, it would just be ideal to go out and play the stuff that we can do together well.
So what's in your covers set list then? What do you do?
Oh God, don't do that to me. I won't be able to remember now.
Just a few.
A bit of Stevie Wonder. Who else?
Richard Bonner track.
Oh yeah, Richard Bonner.
Baby Face.
Yeah.
Susan Tedeschi.
Mm.
Blues.
Yeah.
So, what else?
Ray Charles tune.
Yeah.
Right.
Gotta know that tune. Yeah. that kind of thing.
I like to try and do things like, you know, do things a little bit differently, you know, rather than just, you know, trot out an exact cover version.
Right. So when you're doing covers, therefore, for things like Crossroads, going back to the 1920s, right through to Stevie Wonder, I think that's quite a wide range, and it's going to be a very diverse audience. So we're going to be soaking that up, I would guess.
Yeah, but I think it's all within the same vein. And as James was saying, we like to do our own version of something. So I guess it kind of gets its own stamp and there's a sound to it. So if you like what we sound like, then you'd like it.
In terms of, the songs for the album, were that you gave the impression they were already written. Was that the case, or was there a bit of a rush to get a few in?
They were pretty much already written. I have to say, I didn't have like millions of songs what am I going to choose? It was very much like, okay, I've just written these songs. That's quite handy. Should we record them? Okay. probably a couple that came together nearer the end. I think Pain and Sweet Release were later ones. And a couple of... And Took It For Granted. Was it? Maybe I'd known it longer than you. But and then a couple that were much older. So right. A bit of a range, but... It wasn't a mad rush, luckily.
Is the writing still coming, though? Are you still feeling the muse coming, and are you still writing songs?
I'm actually feeling very inspired at this present moment. No, the past couple of weeks, getting into some new stuff that I've not heard before and starting to feel like I want to write again, but I haven't for a while. It's very hard when you're, being on the organising end of things and thinking, okay, got to do those gigs and try and get that person to hear it, blah, blah, blah. I just... find it very hard to just switch off and sit down and write, but it's coming back again, so yes. I think I'm going to have a writing patch now.
You're kind of torn, aren't you, really, in between the creative Tommy Ludgate and then the manager, business person Tommy Ludgate, aren't you? It was a difficult line to tread, I guess.
Yeah, but I think nowadays it's kind of the way it is. People are doing so much for themselves now that it's kind of the way you've got to be, and I think it's really good to understand the whole... both sides of it. So that you know what you're doing. It would be horrible to just be doing the creative side and leave everything else up to everyone else, because I don't think you can trust anyone to make the right decisions.
Well, you can't. I mean, you're so right. I mean, back in the 60s, everybody had a manager who came along and said, sign here, boy, and we'll make you rich, you know, and everybody, with that exception, got ripped off royally, you know, to the extent.
There you go.
And it was only if you ever got a second chance to make another album and get a new management and get a new deal did you ever make any money out of the business. And so many of the bands that became household names in the 60s and 70s, and even, I guess, to the present day, you know, did their 3 or 4 years in the limelight and then disappeared and made nothing out of it. So I think you're right. It's important you hold on to everything that you can, but it does make a difficulty, I guess, in between being two different people.
Yeah, and it makes it a bit scarier, I guess. It would be nice to have someone kind of, you know, sorting little things out, but yeah, still good to be involved, I think.
Yeah, and I guess you know exactly if there's money coming in and where the money is going and what it's going on as opposed to everything else. Yes.
Yeah.
We've talked too much about business. What are we going to do about music now? What are we going to next?
The next one we're going to do is Sweet Release. Are you ready, James?
I'm actually ready.
Well done.
Well, in as much as I'm prepared to play it.
Went away. A certain lack of liberation in my diet.
now I'm long enough, sweet release. Ooh, oh, sweet release. Ooh, yeah, sweet release. Da 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 da. Yeah, yeah, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now I'm here for my own new adventure. Ready and steady to have another in the picture. Mind you, nothing serious, 'cause I'm better on my own. Just my own little quick fix to unleash this passion I have grown. Didn't do it that far.
How much work did you have to do to change it from the recording, the band recording, if you like, for the album to this one?
Well, I didn't have to change anything. You should ask James that question.
Quite a bit, actually, yeah. Because
don't be too technical, yeah.
Yeah, the way my part is kind of structured on the song, I don't really have to spend too much time thinking about the harmony of it and things like that. I just have written parts and I know that they're in a certain key. Whereas here, you know, I suddenly have to become kind of cognizant of exactly what chords are being played and what's being done.
Yes.
And it's kind of counterintuitive because you remember a song a certain way and certain thing. And so it's all entirely different.
It's like, it'll
especially
different.
If that's become second nature.
Cause
yeah.
Because we trot it out so often. It does become second nature to do it a certain way.
So now you're actually having to use your brain.
Yeah, so now I'm actually having to be like, you know, a proper musician and know what I'm doing.
How did you meet Tommy?
At college, yeah.
Right. You were doing music too?
We both did our degree in popular music performance. And I can't remember when I met her. I mean, I wasn't the most sociable of people at college. And we really only became friends about halfway through the degree, even though I guess we knew of each other.
Mm.
I'd seen him around.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I met her there. Mainly through other people, really. But,
I mean, it sounds kind of strange. I mean, you say that you weren't the most sociable of people. I would have thought doing a degree in popular music performance, it would have, and it's almost a contradiction in terms, isn't it, in a way? That it's, you know, were you the guy with your head down in the corner playing your guitar?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, I guess, without meaning to be too disparaging about it, there's not a great deal of good players there, and there are a lot of people who think that they're good players. And so
there's that ego thing,
you know.
A lot of flashy players, you mean?
Well, not even that, really, but just a lot of people who are more concerned with projecting an image of what they're about than actually, you know, having any substance to it. And so my approach to it, not that it's particularly interesting, I guess, was to kind of sit back and see who I thought would be people that would be worth kind of knowing and getting on with, and who didn't have that aspect of their personality. And I did make a great deal of good friends and stuff there, but I wanted to avoid having to talk to people that I didn't really think I'd get much out.
So in terms of guitar players, who inspires you?
Me? Yeah. Loads, you know. It changes quite a lot. At the moment,
Obviously, players of the less is more fraternity, I would guess, is it?
Not always.
All right.
But I mean, that's an approach that I'm definitely I've grown into. You know, like being aware of the fact that to be able to do something that affects people without being flash is a lot harder than it is to just learn a few patterns and then run them to death until you can play something really quickly and then, you know, keep exhibiting that over and over again. But it, with regards to players that I like, people at the moment, like guys like Derek Trucks, John Mayer, like contemporary guys.
Yes.
But I still like to listen to a lot of Clapton and Stevie Ray Vaughan and guys like Robert Cray, and with regards to like blues guitarists.
Yeah.
And there's a whole load of kind of like jazz guys that I like. And I do like the kind of flash rock stuff as well, which take what I can from each thing.
Yeah. You know?
And because I always found, especially with that, that it's a lot more effective, that kind of thing, if you kind of wheel it out once in a while rather than
Do it all the time.
Yeah, it all the time, and then everyone gets like fed up of it and you become that guy. You know, he's got one trick.
It's very difficult to pigeonhole your music, isn't it, Tommy, in the sense that you can't very say, oh, it's just straight-made blues, you're not like Bonnie Raitt. You could say, well, a bit like Joss Stone-ish, in the sense you've got a great soulful voice. You are quite difficult to pigeonhole, aren't you?
Yeah, I have no idea how to explain my music. And that's the one question people always ask you. So, what kind of music do you do? I'm like, I don't really know. And it's really hard to stand back from it and hear it as something in itself when you've been doing it.
So when the club owner says, Tommy, I'd like to come to the club, but, you know, but what do you do? What do you like? Name somebody you like. What do you say? What do you say to them?
I don't know. No, I guess it's just got elements of blues, soul, a little bit of funk.
Jazz is there too.
Oh, and jazz, that was the other one. I knew there was another one, and I couldn't think what it was. But yeah, you're right, it's not a straight-ahead thing, and I don't know who I'm like. Maybe that's a good thing.
Does it make it more difficult to get gigs as well, though, do you think?
What, not knowing what you are?
or even being impossible to pigeonhole, you know?
In a way, yeah, there's, I don't know, a lot of the gigs we've been doing, there's a lot of kind of folky acoustic stuff going on, and then obviously if it's something like rock, we don't fit in there at all, but in a way, but not really. I think the proof's in the pudding, that's the saying, isn't it? So once we do a gig, people hear it and they like it, so if I can't explain, you know, it's best to just listen to it, and then it goes down well, hopefully, and we get more gigs from that.
The last person sitting here doing a session was Walter Trout. He is of a good age, basically, and he was bemoaning, as many of the older blues guys tend to do, that when they look out into their audience, all they see is old, grey-haired, paunchy guys. What sort of people are you attracting? You won't be attracting the old, grey-haired, paunchy guys. You're obviously attracting a much younger audience, which is great for the music and great for you. Are you covering all the bases in terms of age as well?
I think it is quite varied, yeah. It depends. A lot of the gigs we've been doing, we're kind of playing to an audience that are not necessarily there to see us because we're new, you know, we haven't got a massive following yet. But no, we get good feedback from all ages. Obviously not really young, but kind of teenagey, my age upwards. Good range, I think.
Ooh. That happens with music that's music, though. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think that music's at its best when it's kind of fashionless, you know? Like, for instance, I went and saw Kate Rusby recently, and there's just a whole diverse amount of people there. And the one thing that they've got in common is, like, that they like Kate Rusby, you know? Whereas you can go and see some band, and the one thing that they'll have in common is they all like the same haircut.
Yes.
Rather than they all like that band.
Yeah.
You know, they think that they should be there because should be there.
It was twas ever thus, though, I'm afraid. I mean, there's always been the young pop audience who follow the young pop bands purely for the whole fashion, the whole thing. I mean, the music is almost incidental in a sense.
And I think with this kind of thing, like once you can take it, like, especially like now, like if you can take it onto acoustic guitars and still make it
interesting,
and people can still like it because there's no particular style there for people to kind of latch onto. And I think that's when you have like music that's good, and you know, like if you took like a jazz standard down onto like acoustic instruments, it sounds great, you know. Whereas if you took some new metal song down onto keyboards and, you know, upright bass, it's not going to fly, you know.
No. You were probably too young and too fresh and too new for the festival season for this year, but are you lined up for next year? Looking at festivals?
No, but that's a good point. I hope we can do some stuff. But yeah, I get the impression you kind of need to get in there now.
Yes.
So maybe I'll go home and do that this afternoon. But no, that would be really cool. But it's the same thing as you were saying earlier, kind of it's hard to place us, so it's hard to know who to approach on that kind of grand scale of things when there seems to be quite a vibe. But I guess I've never actually been to a festival, so I don't really know. But I guess they have all the different
the thing
tents
is,
stuff, don't they?
If you take the one that I was last at, which was in St. John, Portugal, it was all world music, and therefore, it's one particular genre, although the world music covers such a wide range. But normally, all the UK festivals, they do have so many different stages. You could so easily fit from one stage or another. You know, they can easily, if they like the sound of it, there's not worry about saying, oh, it doesn't work with our festival, because most festivals it would work with.
Okay, good. Well, that's good to know.
And they're great for getting CDs over the edge of the stage. So is that your life now, selling CDs over the stage at the venues you're at, basically? Or are you not doing that?
Yeah. And I just want to get us gigging more, and just, it'd be nice to get out of London and do some different venues. And yeah, festivals would be nice, but that's the kind of thing we're going for.
By the sound of things, it seems like you haven't got the plan written down in your Excel spreadsheet, basically. About,
no, but there isn't a plan.
If it's November, we must be therefore looking at the northeast and things, nothing like that.
No, I obviously, it's good to be organised and have a plan, but I don't think you really can plan things. And because we're at such an early stage, yes, there's no strategy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of still finding my feet and working out what would be the best way to approach things and kind of how to get the music out there, but I'm just kind of taking it as it comes and working it out. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm making up as I go along.
You're doing very well with it, though, I think.
Oh, thanks.
And I think as a first album, it shows so much confidence and so much sort of gravitas in the voice. If people want to find out more about you, there's obviously websites and MySpace pages. Where can they find out more about Tommy Ludgate?
They can. It's tommyludgate.com or myspace.com/ Tommy Ludgate. Quite simple. But TommyLudgate.
And are they both as up to date as each other, basically? So if you could,
Oh, we're on iTunes. That's a good point, James. And the album, hard copies are available from the website
and
as well.
And you also were the biggest, you got into the charts in iTunes, am I right?
Yeah, we did really well. the album was featured on the Blues homepage and went into number 7 at one point in the Blues chart, so pretty pleased with that.
So have you been able to go out and spend all the money you've earned from that?
Any money yet, no. I don't even know how many we sold, but it takes a while for all the information to come through.
That's
so
true.
We'll find out one day.
But to get number 7 is pretty fair, I think. Yes.
Yeah, well, thanks.
And the writing, too. I think it's a great sign. What are you going to finish with today?
Thank you very much. The last song we're going to do is called So Cruel. And thanks for having us.
It's been great fun.
One man can save the whole world, though he did save 1,628 souls. It sounds like many, but it's not enough. Why are so many people so cruel? We're all the same deep down inside. Feel mostly love, tell some little why. so cruel.
For the last 45 minutes, we've been listening to the words and the music of Tommy Ludgate. Thank you for being our guest on The Raven and the Blues.
Thank you very much for having us.